Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
Discover the power within. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with your host, Reverend Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Fort Worth in Texas. Today, I welcome an author, chakra expert, and spiritual teacher. His name is Shai Tubali. He comes to us all the way from Berlin in Germany, where he runs a school for spiritual development and holds seminars, trainings, satsangs, and retreats. His latest book is entitled Unlocking the Seven Secret Powers of the Heart. It's a practical guide to living in trust and love. And goodness knows we want that these days. So it's a very important subject. So it's a real pleasure to welcome Shai Tubali to today's show. Welcome. Glad you're with us.
Yes, I'm very glad to be here. Thank you.
You know, you draw a distinction in your book, don't you, between the mind and the heart, you know, the cognitive part of ourselves, the brain and the heart, right? Because the mind, we could say the mind encompasses both, but when you use the word mind, you're talking mostly about the discursive mind, you know, the intellect or whatever. And sometimes we take too much of our lead from that part of our being, right? Instead of accessing the heart. And in the West, of course, especially, you know, especially since the 17th century, it seems, you know, then the growth of rationalism, you know, the head takes the lead, right? And then the heart sort of follows up, or the heart has been sort of downgraded to romance or whatever. But you're saying that this needs to shift, right? This because the heart is got incredible powers.
That's actually a brilliant distinction. Thank you for saying that. Yes, we need to distinguish. Of course, the mind as a whole contains the heart. But then when we speak of the mind here, we speak of that activity that we can call a brain activity that is intellectual and mental. And that surely in our society takes the lead. Now, what this book basically does is to distinguish brain strategies from heart strategies. It basically states that what we usually endorse or support or adopt is the brain strategies, which usually never work. And then we get actually the opposite from a beneficial or functional life, and this is because we are giving the heart a secondary role, and we actually don't know how to access it because we've minimized it, we've reduced it in such a way that it has become exactly this part of sort of emotional fragility, heartbrokenness, and so on and so on. But this book suggests to begin to rely on heart strategies.
Right. We see this all around our world right now, don't we? We see that, you know, what's remaining of the heart is usually based in the most primitive things, you know, like fear and hate and nationalism, all these kind of things that are now sort of taking over large parts of our world, you know, people responding viscerally to that rather than their higher awareness. And, you know, it's hard to deal with that because once people have got those, you know, extreme fundamentalist aggressive attitudes, you know, that come from that and an unredeemed heart, if you like, then it's hard to control that level of hatred. We see it in the Middle East. We see it in modern day America, unfortunately. We certainly see it in Europe, you know, which has moved progressively to a more nationalistic viewpoint. We see it in Britain, you know, my home country, You know, with this fear of anything larger than ourselves, you know, the idea of Brexit, we got to be separate again, which, you know, to me is probably a mistake, but many people think that that's the way to go. So how do we do that? You know, how do we redeem? Maybe redeem's the wrong word. How do we open our heart to a larger awareness? Because I know many people yearn for that. You know, and your work is all about that. You know, these the folks that want that higher way, right? They want to open to greater awareness.
Exactly. It's a very important point, the point of nationalism, because it is nationalism is simply an extension of one of the mind's tendencies to divide. It creates division everywhere, whatever it is. It doesn't see things, life as a whole. It doesn't see creation as a whole. It sees it through fragments. It breaks creation into pieces. And then this is the source of all conflict. So here enters the heart, because the heart sees and perceives things as a whole. And as simple as this may sound, the most basic practice that I suggest for that is literally shifting our attention from the head area to the chest area. This entails shifting our attention to such a degree that eventually we begin to experience that our heart is now our head, and we see through the heart's eyes. As soon as we practice this very simple practice, we begin to perceive life as a whole, the qualities of the heart begin to awaken. Of course, we need much more cognitive insight into the nature of the heart, and that's why I wrote this book.
Right, very good. Well, you know, there's a spiritual teacher from the 20th century in Britain called Douglas Harding.
Yes,
you may be familiar with him. Anyway, he wrote his teachings are called The Headless Way, because.
Yes.
He discovered that, you know, you can never see your own head. You know, you see other people's heads. You can see your head in a mirror, but never directly. and it's the idea that what we're really seeing with is that openness, that open-heartedness that is the reality of us, right? And to get beyond this idea that I'm me, you know, because we're one in truth. And the heart knows this, doesn't it? It recognizes that connectedness in a way that the head doesn't. I like what you said, you know, the mind, the brain constantly divides, you know, sees differences. Perhaps that's his gift, but it's also a big failing. I think, you know, they say that it was Eve offering the apple that was the source of the fall. But my contention is the source of the fall was when God said to Adam, you could name everything, you know, and he started naming everything and separating it out. And I think that was the true fall, because, you know, once we separate things into categories, then when we see ourselves as different from them, right? And we have to unthink, if you like, right? We have to reimagine a life without all those labels, because sometimes you can label it. And then you think you know it, and you don't. You know, you just because you've labeled it doesn't mean you really see it, right?
Yes, at least to be able to have a perception that exists prior to tagging and naming, because of course tagging and naming are very important activities of our mind and what. Makes us able to judge correctly, to discern. But what we do need is to have the heart as our primary head, and then the mind as its what we can call its servant. Because what part of the statement of this book is that we have appointed the mind the one that determines and tells us what the meaning of life is, what that explains to us the why, that defines our motivation. and that gives us direction. But then what happens is that this poor servant does not really know what to do with this role, because it was never meant to be a king. And then it begins to fail in its mission and to lead us astray. So as soon as the head becomes again the heart servant, it relaxes. Finally, we don't have all these contradictory thoughts and opposing thoughts that bring us actually to more confusion.
Yes. Yeah, I love that idea that, you know, the brain needs to serve the heart, not the other way around, right?
And yes.
You know, I think it's Blaise Pascal, the great French writer and mathematician, that said that the heart has its reasons, of which reason knows nothing. And to me, that sums it up quite well. You know, the heart is an intuitive, knowing organ, right, or awareness that is deeper than the reasoning that happens in your brain. I like what you said too. It's not about not having a reason, right? These are essential for guiding us through life, just as our egos can be useful, right? We're not saying give all that up, but we're saying put it in the right relation have it serve the higher purpose. And unfortunately, you know, in modern society, it often doesn't. Another thing that the heart's become is a sort of repository for all romance and gushy, you know, soppy stuff. You know, when you listen to music from, you know, the 20th century onwards, and you know, it's all about broken hearts and falling in love, etc., etc. Which isn't really what the heart is about, is it? You say that it's the myth of fragility, right? We tend to think the heart is fragile, always breaking and always sad. You know, I loved you, and now you don't love me anymore, etc. So tell us more about that. That's not the truth of the heart.
Yes, that's beautiful, because it's exactly this love and its opposite. Because the truth is that the heart, as a source of power and authenticity, actually has a love, knows a love that has no opposite. So and here we need to distinguish what you call fragility from vulnerability. And what I say is that the vulnerability is a tremendous quality that is actually associated with power, while fragility is the result of the wrong strategy of the brain. What happens is that our brain, which is actually again trying to do its best in its role to defend the organism, both body and mind, tries to protect us, from pain, to protect us from danger, and then it begins to toughen up the system, and it responds to life through resistance. Whenever there is pain, whenever there is disappointment, it contracts and it builds up or consolidates even more the wall that it has built around the heart. And this eventually makes us actually more vulnerable, when more fragile. We are starting to be tremendously insulted in a response to very minor criticism. We cannot hold things because we are so, we feel ourselves so tender and so much in need of self-defense. Now, what the heart does on the other hand is that it knows that it can remain completely open, and that actually this state of complete openness makes it invulnerable, non-fragile. That means that it becomes unconditionally open to receive whatever happens. And then nothing can harm it. That is a very strange strategy for the mind. Of course, it doesn't make sense at all. But as soon as we try it, for example, to remain in love, to remain in openness, to remain in forgiveness, we realize that nothing can damage this heart.
Very beautifully put. It's counterintuitive, though, isn't it? And people have a hard time understanding it at one level, you know? I think that's why they have a hard time understanding what Jesus was really talking about.
Exactly.
When he said, you know, turn the other cheek. He wasn't talking about being weak, you know, and being abused by other people. He was saying you don't have to resist it. You can look at it in a different way. It's you're free of that. You know, you're free of that resistance. And we say in Unity, you know, what you resist persists, and it does, mm-hmm. because whatever mm-hmm. you're resisting is you're only strengthening, right?
Exactly.
So this way of vulnerability is letting go of that resistance and resting in the beauty that you are, right? That we're free, we're safe, we're one, and to understand that is very powerful, I think. And you mentioned that in the book, you know, that the heart is the place of true power, really.
Yes, that it is the source of power, it is the source of true confidence, the feeling of strength. And strangely, we're never looking in that direction. And actually, Jesus showed us this way when he emphasized all these qualities, keeping the heart unconditionally open while emanating such a sense of power, indestructibility. If we just look at his example, then I think there's a great learning to learn. I don't think in that he was extraordinary. I think he simply embodied this capacity of our very own heart.
Right. And, you know, sometimes we talk about Jesus as the great exception, but we look at him as more the great example. You know, he's an example of what we can all do. Unfortunately, we've made him into this sort of one and only deified figure that he's the Son of God, so he could do it. But in truth, we're all sons and daughters of the divine, right? So we can inherit that. And in fact, he kept saying that to us, didn't he, throughout his gospels? You know, the kingdom of heaven is within you. You know, things I do, you can do too. You know, it's your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom, et cetera, et cetera. You know, he called us to that higher level that you're talking about. In the book, there's a section. Well, there's a number of sections, folks, if you're interested in the book. It's a great book. There's a couple of sections on doing some exercises or short meditations. One of them is heart activation, and that's sort of the opening passages. And it's helping us move our focus right from our head, from that cerebral way of thinking and being, down into this heart place. Can you just describe it briefly, what technique that is?
Yes, it's basically it's a three-stage technique, and it is recommended to be done daily. And actually, I guide it on a YouTube video. So if someone just writes a basic heart activation, they can be guided properly and simply close their eyes and follow the guidance.
Good.
So it's three stages, and the first one is exactly this what you mentioned, the Douglas Harding way of being headless. This means to begin to drain, energetically drain all the mental energy from the head area all the way to the chest area, so that we're literally sinking into the chest area and positioning our self, our true self, in the chest area, at the center of the chest. And then from there, we begin to look at everything. We begin to have our ears, our eyes, our very perception located in the heart. That is the first stage. And actually, I recommend to do that whenever possible, especially when we feel that we are stuck in the head, because as soon as we see things through the heart, everything changes. And then the second stage is another energetic stage, which is to visualize and imagine how we are moving our energy from a withdrawn state, a withdrawn condition, as if our energy is sinking into our chest, into ourselves, towards the world. This means that we are visualizing the heart opening up like a flower towards the world, to agree to face everything. Because again, as I said before, the brain works through resistance. It says, I don't want to experience pain. I'm afraid to experience insult. I'm afraid to experience disappointment. Therefore, I will build a wall. But the heart opens up like a flower and says, yes, I agree to experience, I agree to face the world. And the third stage is the heart knowing. And that is a very crucial point, because the heart is based in deep knowing. Unlike the brain that is based in thinking and speculating, the heart knows. So then we need to declare some kind of something that we deeply know. Knowing in terms of our innermost being, what we know without a doubt and prior to the doubting mind. So all these three stages, they happen in a short meditation of something like 15 to 20 minutes, and it basically educates us to be positioned in the heart.
Yes, very good. And like you said, people can listen to it on YouTube if they desire. So that's awesome. And it's just called basic, what was it?
Yeah,
basic heart meditation.
Basic heart activation. Yes.
Activation. Yeah, excellent. Well, it reminds me of the Tibetan practice of Tonglen Gland, you know, which is the sending and taking of the breath. And you breathe in the dark black smoke of all the pain of existence. And then you breathe out the white light of beauty and joy. And people don't like this idea sometimes, because the idea, well, I don't want to breathe in all the dark, but what it says is that the heart in you, the truth of you, is greater than all the darkness, you know, and you have the power to transform that into light. So bring it on, you know, take it all in, all the sadness of the world, all the sadness of yourself. And then do that wonderful exchange, you know, realize the power that you have to bring light into the world. And it's, if you do it for a while, it's very beautiful, actually, because it's you realize, man, I'm a center of light and love. I'm a center of this true heart power, this heart knowing. And nothing in the world is to be, you know, to be afraid of, because I can take it all in and transform it. And I think it's cool, you know, the black smoke becomes the white light, the pure light, the clear light. And it's very similar to what you're talking about. So, excellent. So far, so good. I love this book. So now we're talking about the seven, the powers of the heart, and you mentioned, well, there's many more than seven, but you're focusing on seven particularly powerful ones in the book.
Essential ones, yes.
Yeah, essential ones. And so I want to spend the second half of the show talking about those, but we got a couple of minutes before we break. How did you come up with these particular seven?
Well, as a result of working with people, I've come to realize that these seven are the ones that are enough to shift the center of gravity of our being to the heart. And these are exactly also the seven types of superstitions that our brain holds about and against the heart, what the heart cannot do. And I'm just pointing out that this is not only that the heart can do it, but only the heart can do it.
Right. By the way, folks, this book is not just a nice book to read. It's a great book to gift to somebody, because it's on shiny paper and has beautiful illustrations in it. It would make a great gift for anyone. And so I recommend that too. And it's one of those books that is a joy to look at as well as to read. And if you want to get in touch with Shai, the easiest place is shaitabali.com, right? That's your website? Yeah, so it's shaitabali.com, one word, and get in touch with him that way. And also, like we said, he has YouTube videos that you can find as well and enjoy those. And this book, of course, is available on all the usual outlets, so it's easily available. We're at the break. We're going to listen to these messages from Unity. And then we'll be back to talk about these seven powers. And by the way, I want to thank everybody for listening to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Network, the voice of an awakening world. I'm grateful for my ability to be the host of this show. I've been doing it for 11 years now. If you want to get in touch with me or find out more about what I'm doing, you can email my email is pauljohnroach@yahoo.com, but you can look at my website at pauljohnroach.com and find out all the other things that we're doing. And we've had some amazing shows recently, and I think there's a generation of energy moving in many areas, and I'm excited that it's happening in Berlin as well. So we thank Shai for his work in Berlin. And all the other people around the world that are doing wonderful things. So thanks again for listening to this show. And well, let's take a break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes with Shai Tubali. And again, we're looking at his book, Unlocking the Seven Secret Powers of the Heart, a practical guide for living in trust and love. Thank God. Thank goodness for that title. It's wonderful, isn't it? Just feels good just to say it. Join us in a couple of minutes.
Thanks for joining us. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Unity Online Radio is bringing the message of unity to thousands of spiritual seekers around the world. If you enjoy our programming, we invite you to support it by visiting unityonlineradio.org and clicking on Donate Now. Help us continue to provide inspiring content to everyone. Thank you for your support.
Here's a Unity Mindful Moment by Ed McShane, a coach for your heart.
I listen to the Thought for the Day from Homeboy Industries often, and I caught a quote that Greg Boyle used in one of his former talks. He said, "Only the soul that ventilates the world with tenderness has any chance of changing the world." But I got hung up on the meaning of the word ventilate as it applies to this passage. It means to cause air to enter and circulate freely. When we ventilate the world with tenderness, we circulate the oxygen of love. Ventilation holds our soul in place. So apply it to the little things, moment to moment. Go back to your breath every time you approach annoyance and upset and breathe understanding and patience. Ventilate the world in front of you, and it will change for the better moment by moment, person to person, from one breath to the next.
To find out more about A Coach for Your Heart, visit acoachforyourheart.com.
Congratulations to Unity Books for winning honors as Best Small Press from the Nautilus Book Awards. Two books published by Unity are also winners of the prestigious Nautilus. Stations of the Cosmic Christ by Matthew Fox won a gold medal, and Andrew Harvey's book, Turn Me to Gold, won silver. The Nautilus Award celebrates books supporting spiritual growth and positive social change. Find these award-winning books at unity.org/shop or on Amazon in print or ebooks. For over 23 years, Liz Dawn and her team at Celebrate Your Life have been presenting transformative events with some of the world's leading spiritual teachers. Experience a Celebrate Your Life event for yourself, October 31st to November 4th in beautiful Sedona, Arizona. Explore your spirituality and open your mind to some new ideas. These events are awesome soul fests that heal and transform. Log on to CelebrateYourLife.com to find out more.
Discover how to connect with our loved ones on the other side with Suzanne Giesemann and Messages of Hope. Tune in every Thursday at 3 p.m. Central as Suzanne shares evidence that love never dies. In evidential medium, spiritual teacher, and author, Suzanne brings hope and healing through her gift of communication with those who have passed. Suzanne brings messages of hope and love that go straight to the heart. Tune in this Thursday right here on Unity Online Radio.
Call now with your question or comment. 816-251-3555. That's 816-251-3555.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Shai Tabali talking about his book, Unlocking the Seven Secret Powers of the Heart. We mentioned in the break about Kuan Yin because there's a reference to the goddess of compassion or the bodhisattva of compassion in the book. And, of course, the bodhisattva idea is, the person becomes enlightened or aware of oneness with everything. And at that stage, you can sort of dissolve, in the Buddhist tradition. You don't have to be reborn again. But in the bodhisattva tradition of Buddhism, it's the idea that the bodhisattva looks back at all the suffering in humanity and makes a vow that as long as there's one person suffering, that bodhisattva will remain and be embodied again so that it can be a loving presence in the world. It's a beautiful concept. In a sense, you could see Jesus as a bodhisattva, right? Somebody that, was one with God and yet chose to teach and to live in a human form. And I think that very much speaks to the heart, doesn't it, Shai? The idea that, the heart is always wanting to give, right? That's one quality of it. It's compassionate. It's loving. It sees no boundaries, right?
Yes, I will tell you something about this story because when I tell this story to people, to my audience in seminars or in lectures, and therefore to me this is a very sacred moment when I tell this story of Kuan Yin, of her decision to remain forever at the gateway of heaven, never to enter and to immerse herself in a state of nirvana and forgetfulness of the world. People always respond with an extreme emotional reaction, and they cry. Even people who are, let's say, completely stuck at the moment in some kind of an emotional process and feel completely powerless to love, when they hear this story, their heart explodes. And then I tell them, look what is happening right now, because this is a very meaningful moment. This moment when your heart overpowers your brain, overpowers your current evolutionary stage, and simply floods you with remembrance. And that is because I understand that now we are going to start exploring the seven different powers of the heart. That is power number one, which is what I call heart wisdom. And what I say is that the heart wisdom is never revealed through something that is a newly acquired understanding. It's not something that we accumulate, but rather it is something that we remember. We are reminded of. So we have all these kinds of reminders scattered all over the world. One of them is the story of Kuan Yin. When we hear such stories, we are reminded of the nature of our heart and of our capacity. Suddenly, we can remember that there is a sort of a commitment that is beyond the self to serve, and that this commitment to serve is actually deeply connected to the meaning of life. So long as we look for other types of meaning of life, we feel lost because our brain doesn't know the meaning of life. It can philosophize about it, and we have many philosophies, but it has no connection to any sense of deep, indestructible knowing.
Beautifully put. And you know, that intuitive awareness, right? It doesn't have to think about it. It knows it, right? It's a deep, abiding sense of knowing. I think we've all experienced it in our lives, you know, but sometimes we don't trust it, or we experience it and then we forget about it. Yes. And you're encouraging us to make it actually a living presence every day. Hence the you know, the encouragement to do that activation exercise to open to that wisdom, right? Because it's beautiful. It's without boundaries. That's the way I feel about it. It's it doesn't, you know, it's not like, well, I'm special because I have a special connection to the divine. No, this is beyond our ego. This is, I see it, and I see it in everyone. It's very altruistic, if you like. It's very much, you can't wait to connect to others because you recognize that essentially they are you. We're one with each other. And so it's that kind of wisdom, isn't it?
Exactly.
And it kind of leads into number two, which is the vulnerability. You know, we fear vulnerability from our separateness, but once we realize that we are one, it's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to be open because, you know, we have this presence within us that is totally free and safe, right? So it's okay to be vulnerable. And yet that's a tough one for a lot of us, to be vulnerable.
Yes, and this is the trick again. The because I think the major reason that I wrote this book was because of my experience as a sort of a spiritual teacher, meeting so many people that seemed to open or to agree to open their hearts, but then ended up feeling even more fragile. People feel that then they remove the filters that keep them strong enough or confident enough to respond in the world. But this is because of this built-in belief that the brain distills in us that as soon as we are vulnerable, we are fragile. And here, when we begin to associate heart with power, we understand that this choice of remaining vulnerable is actually the greatest power in the world. Because if you can keep your heart open in a state of even the worst thing that someone could do to you, that makes you much bigger and stronger than your so-called victimizer. That means that your heart is and your being are actually bigger than any situation. And this is one of the heart's capacities to contain. It contains and includes, and as you mentioned before with the Buddhist practice, it also transforms.
Right, yeah. And there's a author and seminar leader in our area here who actually become quite well known, Brené Brown, you know, and she does a lot of work on on vulnerability and not having to be perfect, you know, the imperfection of ourselves. And what she means by that is, yeah, we are perfect as spiritual beings, but we're definitely imperfect in terms of our humanness, and that's okay. Yeah. You know, we don't have to be perfect, if that makes any kind of sense. In other words, there's a sense of it's okay to be the whole that we are in all our messy bits and all our vulnerabilities. You know, that's part of being fully alive, right? And you know, we just lost a dog recently, and a good companion for 10 years. And it's amazing the grief that you feel for a pet, you know, and yet I wouldn't swap the pain and the grief, you know, for anything, because it makes me real. If I didn't feel sad for the dog and grieve his loss, you know, I don't think I'd be fully alive. So I want to be vulnerable to that, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to be overwhelmed by it so that I can't function. But, you know, it's, in other words, everything is part of this. It's grist for the mill. I was talking to another guest on the show, and, you know, another Tibetan idea is this idea that, you know, our vulnerabilities, our distractions, our, quote, weaknesses are actually our best teachers, because they help us expand into a greater awareness. You know, if we try and be perfect as our brain would want it, you know, then it means we're sort of shut off. We're almost like automatons, like a computer, whatever. So, you know, it's okay to cry. Jesus himself wept, didn't he, when Lazarus died, you know, so it's okay to be vulnerable in that sense.
Yes, our heart is big enough to agree to pain, there is no more suffering.
Actually,
suffering is the resistance to pain.
Can you say that again? Because that was a great line.
Yes, that suffering is the resistance to pain. Pain in itself can never cause suffering. It actually. It's like a flower. It opens up, it transforms, and then it becomes something else. It becomes a quality in us.
You said if our heart is open to pain, there will be no more suffering.
Never. You cannot suffer if you agree to pain.
Pain is
an inseparable part of life. We could never remove it from the equation of life if we ever want to feel also happiness and joy. But but suffering is definitely not an inseparable component of life. It is our disagreement, this unwillingness to experience life as a whole.
Right. Beautifully put. I love that. And it sort of links in with the next power, which is forgiveness. And you tell this wonderful, moving story of one of the children of the Holocaust, who was a twin and suffered under the horrors of Dr. Mengele, you know, the horrific doctor of Auschwitz. And I think I guess one of the twins didn't survive, but the other one did. And she, at the end, towards the end of her life, forgave the camp and the Nazis and everything that happened to her. And I mean, it's a powerful thing. We hear the same story from other remarkable people too, that they forgive the people who have killed their loved ones or whatever. And we ask ourselves, how can that be? You know, how can you feel that kind of forgiveness? But what you mentioned is that she didn't want to be held down by it anymore. She wanted to be free, right? She didn't want to hold that resentment or that hatred, because it would destroy her. So her way through that was to forgive, to give that up, so that she wasn't ruled by it.
Yes, yes. I actually would like to use this opportunity to feel the great presence of this woman, because she died just 1 week ago.
Oh my goodness!
And yes, she died in Poland while in an educational tour in death camps. And she was an American, and then her name was Eva Mendes-Cohr. And this tremendous woman, by the way, she is exactly this one of those examples that show us that we don't have to be Jesus to be the embodiment of love. And second, whenever I tell her story, people again respond immediately with heart knowing, because everyone knows that their hearts can forgive like that. And when they hear that someone who had to endure such torture, such unbelievable atrocities, was willing to forgive and. Then they know what excuse can they give for not being able to forgive, I don't know, their parents, their sisters or their friends, you see, or their ex-husband. She forgave in such a tremendous way. And this is because she understood something very simple. We spoke before of the strategies of the brain. The brain strategy says if you forgive, you're going to lose twice. You see, that sounds very reasonable, because you lost once when you were victimized, and now you are forgiving and you are becoming even weaker. So, and this actually a very bad strategy, because it keeps us engaged to the past and to our victimizers. Energetically, we never let go. And we think that this makes us stronger, because we are hateful, we are angry, we are bitter. But this weakens our life force and doesn't allow us to begin life again.
It's very counterintuitive to the brain, right? But makes total sense to the heart again, which is what we're talking about. I like the phrase, resentment is a poison that we take hoping that the other person will die, you know. And basically, we do the damage to ourselves. And it's the same with unforgiveness. I mean, we're damaging ourselves instead of being free. And I love what you said. We know it intuitively. That's why people resonate with that story, because we know that, you know, I could, if I forgive, I'd be free. I'd be, the weight would be off my shoulders. And most of us carry around a great burden, don't we, of all those old resentments and fears and whatnot. And the idea of being able to let them go, oh my goodness, you know, that can yield incredible emotion and tears, because we realize, man, that would be such a wonderful thing to do. So yeah, thanks for lifting up that lady, and we wish her well on her ongoing journey, and thanks for her example in this lifetime. Absolutely. Yes. And that sort of leads into your fourth power, the ability to love. They kind of sequentially support each other, don't they?
You know,
and I like that. Once we forgive, you know, our ability to love blossoms.
Yes. And yes, at least our recognition that we can love at this very moment, because there is a superstition, once again, that and I meet it so many times with the many thousands of people that I teach or train. There is a sort of a new age conception that one needs to first heal, love themselves, embrace themselves, and go through a sort of a process and to be given first love until they have matured and they've become able to love themselves, to love others. And this is completely wrong, because first of all, this tomorrow never comes. People, I meet people, then after 5, 10, 15 years, they're still feeling that they need to undergo a process, because there is some kind of an image of completeness, of total healing. And the thing is that the heart doesn't need to wait at all. The heart is capable of loving right now, despite all our traumas, despite all our memories and imprints, and because there are two parts or two layers to our heart. One is the earthly human part that has definitely been bruised and wounded, and this part has accumulated memories. This part does need a sort of process of healing. But the other part is what we can call our heavenly, our spiritual, or our divine part of the heart, is capable of opening up completely right now to love without any process, because its very nature is abundance. So here, when we begin to contact this part of our heart, we get in touch with what I call non-causal emotions. These are emotions that stream from our heart rather than being nourished or fed by our surroundings. So we can conclude that there is a common conception that we need to be loved, but our true need, our true heart desire is not to be loved, but rather to love. You see,
right? Yeah.
And that is something that we really need to recognize to be able to transform this waiting mode.
Yes, I like that very much. You know, we talked a lot on the show about short path to enlightenment than the long path. You know, the short path is that instant enlightenment kind of awareness. And then there's the long path is the sort of gradual improvement of oneself. And they really support each other, you know, because if you have a breakthrough and you understand the totality of everything, then you still have to make it work in your everyday life. So the long path is important. But we don't want to forget that there's this also this immediate awakening where you realize, yes, I am a being of love. That's my nature to love and to give. And that kind of links with your next one, which is emotional transformation. There's an alchemy that can happen, right? That, you know, as long as you're alive, you're in that teachable moment, if you're open to it, things can transform themselves. You can reframe things. It's never too late to have a happy childhood, as the cliche goes, or whatever. You know, there's an ability to shift. We're not limited by conditions or stories, right?
Yes. Here, basically, this power states that our emotions, our confused and then conflicted emotions, are like orphans. They're like lost children, wandering on earth and looking for their mother, looking to return home. And their home is in the heart, and this is a very important point to understand, that we, as soon as we are learn how to position our being inside the chest area, inside the heart, there is a sort of a magnetic power in the heart that holds the power to draw any kind of emotion from our the lower parts of our being, or from the higher parts of our being, which is the brain, obviously, and to literally transmute these emotions into one central emotion, which is love. It's like all of our emotions are basically a confused search for love, for this state that we truly long for. And we are trying our best, but we are actually, as always, reaching the very opposite. So here, this is the point of so-called tantric transformation that can take place as soon as we position ourselves in the heart.
Right. And, you know, interesting you should use the word tantric, because, you know, when people hear that word, they think all kinds of things, esoteric, you know, doctrines. Yes. But really, we are tantric beings. I mean, that's the power within us. It's not some abstruse thing from, you know, the East or whatever. It's our ability to, like you said, almost the alchemical reaction within our own beings here that's available to us all. So never shortchange yourself, folks, and what your capability is, because that's the sixth power is the empowerment without limits. And because when we're in this awareness, right, there really are no limits. I just did a show on Tibetan yoga, and I think it was a pre-record, so it'll be going out later. Excellent show, by the way. Look out for it, folks. When you're in this awareness of the natural perfection of who you are, the clear light consciousness, there literally is no limit, because you are literally the universe. And I now don't mean that in a sort of a cosmic new agey sense, but in a very real sense, that we have the universe flowing through us. Just when you breathe, right, you're breathing in molecules that have been all over the planet here. So we're literally of the world of the universe. And so why limit ourselves, right?
Yes. This sixth power is all about the why. What motivates us? Because we can look for our source of motivation in our ambitious parts, our aggressive parts, the parts that want to achieve, and this actually limits our capacity to act in the world, because we are then lacking the why. The why of creation. And as I said, the brain doesn't know the why of creation, and none of us knows exactly how to verbalize the why of creation. but we can feel it. We can feel this, what we can call the first cause, that which connects this the nothing from which creation sprung, and the world of action. And in the middle, in between the nothing and creation, there was one big motivation, which was love. And this should be ideally our very own motivation to doing whatever we do. If we even just adopt this simple mantra, I do this out of love, as sort of an initial motivation for whatever we do, even the simplest things in life, that can change everything.
Absolutely. Gosh, I wish I could talk like for another hour.
Yes.
Because we've only just scratched the surface, haven't we? The last one, we've only got a very short time, but the last one is loving yourself. The fact that there's something within you that loves you so unconditionally that it looks down with love, like Kuan Yin, like the goddess of compassion, on all our imperfections and loves us, especially maybe because of our imperfections. Let me tell you about next week, and then we'll say goodbye to Shai. And next week, I interview Gabriela Girosh-Lander, the author of Transcendental Wisdom of the Maya, the Ceremonies and Symbolisms of the Living Tradition. And Gabriela is an anthropologist as well as a Mayan shaman priestess. So that sounds like a good show. But right now, I want to thank Shai so much. What an awesome book it is. And thank you for sharing your wisdom with us on world spirituality. It's been a joy.
Yes, it has been a joy, a real joy to speak to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for being with us. And folks, get hold of this book if you can. You're going to thoroughly enjoy it. And give it to somebody as a gift, because like I said, it makes a great gift book. All right, we're at the end of the show. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.